Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen, real results, real care, real about recovery.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Hour. Here we are. It is the last one of April. Javi, this is it for April, man. We're done.
What a month.
We're already almost to the fifth month of 2021. We're already starting to hear noise of states that are going to be fully opened. I think the state that I'm living in currently, North Carolina, going to be fully open in June. I think New York City is fully open in July.
Yeah. We were discussing about a potential, July 4 meetup in New York.
Ooh, I'm down. We'll be there. If you all would join for a July 4th meetup, drop a 1 in the chat. I can't see it, so I need to pull it up somewhere else on StreamYard. But we are excited for an amazing show today. Aaron, if you wouldn't mind kicking us off with what we're doing today, man.
Yeah.
It's just going to be an awesome show. I mean, we have some amazing cannabis talent. I don't know what else you'd say. It's just cannabis talent that we have with us today. It's going to be a great show, y'all. Precision Extraction, Doc Light Brands, Hemp Fusion. As a Kentuckian, I must say happy Derby Week to everybody. Please grab yourself a Bourbon on the Rocks or a Mint Julep. You either love them or hate them. I obviously love them. 90% bourbon, 10% julep.
How do you make those? Wait, that I need to know. Well, yeah. I'll Google it later.
Well, yeah, we'll get you one. We'll get you one. I had Aaron pull up something in celebration of Derby today. Please, Aaron, go ahead and play it for us to get us started. It's like gold to my ears. Do you hear that? That guy's been playing this song for decades on the trumpet every year before the race. He calls them to the post. Thank you, Aaron. So my hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, it is a big week for us. Anyway, Javi, what do you got going on today, man? We have a couple minutes for news. Why don't you give us a few stops?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about April, right? So 420 this year, according to Akerna, was the single, like the highest single day sales ever, right? We saw almost $12 million in medical and recreational cannabis sales on 420 or April 20 alone.
112.
Right? That's crazy. Right? And in the 5 days around the holiday, so April 16 to April 20th inclusive, sales reached almost $374 million.
Wow. That's huge.
$374 million.
So last year was the worst 420, like in recent memory, we'll say, of the legal cannabis craze. And this year was the best 420, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting. I mean, the pandemic obviously had a ton to do last year, probably stunted it. But a cool, awesome turnaround story. I mean, the companies are doing it right. They've really figured out the formula right now to get their products in front of people. Javi, do you think there's a big winner right now? Or is it too, I think it's probably too early to call it out. But, you know, just kind of looking at some of the stocks that are up, next Green Wave. Say what?
A lot. I mean, today, one stock that I find very interesting that is on the rise today is Columbia Care. Yes. That is OTCQX, CCHWF,
And they just made an acquisition, right?
Yep, exactly. They are spending $42.5 million on a green housing Long Island.
Interesting. What does that set them up for? I mean, it seems like to me they're already set there for medical. So is this just, it's for increased production?
Yes, it's like a 34-acre cultivation facility in the state of New York, which is pretty sizable.
So they're gearing up for a huge push of rec.
And again, it's a cash and stock deal. Most of it is stock. $15 million is in cash and $27.5 million in stock. So, you know, we're continuing to see this trend where it's cash and stock, but more stock than cash, you know, so back to.
But we don't necessarily like that trend, right, Javi?
I mean, it seems like some people don't. It wasn't good the first time around because people were, you know, many companies were just taking advantage of their, let's say, inflated valuations to use their stock as currency. This time around, with valuations being much more adjusted, much more realistic, reflecting fundamentals the right way, you know, them using the stock to me is a sign of a return to a bullish market, you know, to a return to this notion that these shares are valuable and will be valuable in 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that description. We have a ticker in the chat, FLWPF, the flower. Is that flower company, Vanilla Zoll company?
Fire and Flower, we had them.
That's FFL.
And what
this is FLWPF. So I think this is Flower, right?
Oh, Flower Corporation.
Like FLOWR. Isn't that Flower? That Flower? There's too many flowers, guys. Come on. Give us a break here. Regardless, Fire and Flower, I think you all covered them on Tuesday, their earnings. So we don't need to spend too much time on that. But go back and watch Javi and Patrick talk about that. Really great breakdown. But Fire and Flower, awesome company. Similar to like a High Tide, if you will, but an awesome data play in High Fire. But this one, FLWPF, that's Flower, right, Javi?
Yeah.
The Flower Corp. I like Flower. FLOWR is just the name. I like Flower. I think they have a cool presence. They have a cool footprint. They're in Portugal, I believe. They have had a leadership change recently. So I kind of like in a wait and see a little bit, see how they perform. But I've always liked this company as kind of one of those like under the radar plays as an LP. What do you think, Javi?
I'm just looking, you know, the earnings transcript just came out a few minutes now, a few hours ago. I'm trying to dissect what went on here. Overall, the stock is down substantially today. So it doesn't seem like the best of reactions.
Well, how about this? Javi, we will dissect this in the last 5 minutes of the show.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good? All right. So stay around for that. We'll get to Flower in the final 5 minutes. But we have three incredible executives in the space before them that we want to hit and make sure you guys get as much value out of this as possible. So, Aaron, if you wouldn't mind going ahead and bringing over our first guest. This is Nick Tennant. He is the founder and Chief Technology Officer of Precision Extraction Solutions. He's been on here before. It's been probably, 4 months to half a year. So always excited to check in with you, Nick. How's it going, man?
It's going well. Good to see you guys. I'm glad things are going well for you also.
Absolutely. Where are you traveling today, my friend?
I'm actually going back and forth from Florida. We have some clients down there, so time to go give them some attention.
You know what? That is literally the perfect transition because I want to talk about how you are acquiring such incredible clients. You know, I think we can kind of bypass a little bit of the introduction here. It's in your name. You're an extraction company.
Sure.
But you guys are probably one of, if not the best at what you do. So I want to understand. There you go, Nick. So tell me, man, what is a part of your formula that helps you have clients like TerraSend, like Afria, and so many other successful companies?
Sure. It's exactly kind of what we're doing right now is maintaining the relationships and staying very close to our customers. So ultimately, the better that we understand the customer's needs, we talk to the people. We talk to the people in the labs. We talk to the production managers. Where are the problems? What do you need? How can we provide solutions? How can we develop equipment and technologies to make your production line run better, to make new innovative products that are going to give your company a competitive edge? So that's a big, big part of what we do is maintaining those relationships. And then the second part is, you know, we're an end-to-end solution. So we're not just selling you a piece of equipment and walking away. You know, we can design the facility. We can sit there and train all of their staff. We can integrate SOPs. We can do factory acceptance tests, governmental certifications on the equipment. And we have obviously an end-to-end suite of all of the products that they would ever need to make every single type of extracted product under the sun. So really a one-stop shop that has all of the experts and all of the resources for them to depend upon.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as companies grow, right, what is their incentive to continue to hire your services and not do this in-house, right? Because I understand it at first, right? It's, you know, I'm creating a company, I have a good budget, you know, I want to build some kind of a extraction facility or develop extraction capabilities. I pick up the phone, I call you, you know, it's all solved, you know, within a few months.
Sure.
But, you know, what is the incentive for later? You know, what drives your business in the future?
I think that there's three parts to that answer. And the first one is that really our business is a lot of consumable products, right? So as you put this infrastructure in, it requires ongoing maintenance, ongoing certification, ongoing gaskets, valves, hoses, all these things have to be replaced at regular intervals. So there's a large component of our business that's service-based, and it maintains the relationship with the client. The second part is, as you well know, we're in a frenzy of growth, right? So the frenzy of growth spurs more infrastructure development throughout the 50 states. And of course, now globally means more equipment, means more facilities, means more design. And these companies are not focused their internal resources on doing that because they can outsource it and hire somebody like us. It just wouldn't be a wise value proposition for their resources. So I think that that's the second thing really driving it. And then really the third thing is always keeping their staff trained. As they're bringing these people on, correspondingly, you know, they can't take their internal resources to allocate to planning and creating all this additional equipment and infrastructure. They can't take their internal resources to spin up the product knowledge on all these new people that they're hiring, right? So if you think about like one of these big boys, whether it's TerrAscend, whether it's Trulieve or whomever, the sheer amount of people that they're hiring as they grow, they've got to get those people trained. They got to teach them how to run a production line. They got to teach them how to make shattered butter wax, how to run hydrocarbon ethanol, how to purge, how to package, right? Those are all things that they can outsource to us. So as long as the industry keeps growing, there's going to be a very, very strong incentive for them to keep using companies like ours. And we see the global growth taking place in a frenzy-like fashion until really 2030, before it even starts slowing down that 40% year-over-year CAGR. So we're rather bullish on all the sentiment of the entire industry for all those reasons.
When it comes to the legislation, the licensing requirements, the certifications, you know, that you're touching on there, how does that change how you approach each market? I mean, do you have to have a separate strategy for each state versus each country versus globally? It seems like you might have to have several experts, you know, kind of trained there.
Yeah, we certainly do. So really how you look at this is the compliance burden is different in every jurisdiction. Now, it's overwhelmingly similar in the United States with individual outliers. But when you look on a global basis, there's global conformance that's different from country to country. And what that means is that we may have to carry anywhere between 4 to 20 certifications to represent and fulfill the needs of all of these jurisdictions. So in our organization, we have not only a full-time technical department that understands all of these things, but a full-time compliance department that is merely just managing and working on these compliance initiatives, because as you mentioned, they are diverse and robust and people want to go into these markets. So we need to provide that as a resource.
I always like to ask about international markets, and you mentioned, you know, different regulations across countries. Are you operating outside the US anywhere else?
We are.
Which other countries are you?
Yeah, so we're heating up in Europe. We're also heating up in Thailand, in the Pacific Rim, heating up in Australia. You know, all these jurisdictions are starting to turn, right? You're starting to get momentum. And I kind of think of them almost like cannabis in the United States, maybe in around 2008, 2009, 2010. We are going to get that momentum. It's going to have that snowball effect internationally where it's going to start to pick up as it's moving downhill.
We have a question in the chat, if you don't mind, from Patrick O'Grady. Is it possible in the future to get extractions without using butane and ethanol? And I kind of want to expand on this, on just extraction processes in general, and maybe the trends that you're seeing, and maybe where we'll be in 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we could say the future is here, because it is possible to get high purity extractions without having actual, we'll call it organic solvents, right? Butane, propane, ethanol, methanol, right? We do this in a mechanical fashion. So we can do this by deep freezing. And we actually, if you ever look at the trichome, it's kind of like a little mushroom head sticking off the leaf. And when we deep freeze it, it becomes very brittle, and we can snap those off. Through methods of filtration and purification, this is how you make, for example, ice water hash. This is how the cryocan system works with liquid nitrogen. This is how like dry ice type of bubble hash would be made. So this can be made right now. And actually the water hashes and the solventless hashes are becoming an increasing part of our business and the retail consumer's preference as a whole. And you're seeing, you know, 10, 20, 25% in some regions of retail shelf space being occupied by these alternative types of extraction that are non-solvent based.
Yeah, no, all of these variants of hash are becoming extremely popular, and I can understand why, right? It's they are in some way more familiar for many of the legacy consumers, right? Sure. All these pens and all these sophisticated products are a little bit more confusing, right? But something you can roll into a joint or into a cigarette or in, you know, put in your pipe, a regular pipe, right, is more familiar, is more accessible.
Sure.
Do you continue to see a move toward like hash products and other concentrates or solventless extractions versus, you know, the very easy to use, say, vape pen, for instance?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, right? What we do see is we see shifts away from the flower market as jurisdictions or as individual microclimates become more educated. And as the consumers become more educated and the production people or the extractors become more educated, what happens is that people realize that there's more choices than just smoking flower, right? They'll realize that there's tinctures, edibles, vape pens, et cetera, et cetera. And really, this corresponds to just more extracts as a whole. The space is extremely bullish, and I do believe that it's dominating the market share and will continue to dominate the market share over 50% in the United States for many years to come. As far as how that individual breakdown pans out, you know, it changes so much, right? It's a very dynamic industry because the people that make these products, you can almost think of them like chefs or artists. There's very much a tribal knowledge to it. And they're always making new, cool, innovative products. And that kind of shifts the consumer trend as that happens. So I think that a lot of our clients, what we recommend and a lot of what they do is they're extremely diverse in their production lines, meaning they have production capabilities to make, you know, ice water hash, live rosin, butane, propane, hydrocarbons, sauces, butters, waxes, but also high production ethanol, obviously the distillates, and they're prepared for whatever way the wind blows. That's a lot of what we're seeing. And just because of the overall dynamics, it's very hard to predict those consumer trends.
I have a couple questions that could be related, may not be. So let me just start with one here. It seems like you're in a very cost intensive side of the industry.
Yeah. Talk about it.
I want to know how you've been so successful and you were able to get over that initial hump of being an extraction company in the cannabis industry, because it seems like you're probably rolling now. You're probably to a good groove, but I feel like there's a huge barrier for extraction companies to get past. So would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah. So to give you a point of reference, you know, the minimum that you're really going to get into a commercial type extraction environment is probably $300K in investment. And that's bare bones, like a single hydrocarbon extractor.
Yeah.
Our average ticket, you know, it's a lot, right? Yeah. I mean, our average ticket is anywhere from 600 to 1.4 million on an average ticket size, right? But remember, we're doing business with a lot of the big boys. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like a heavy CapEx, but what you have to remember, guys, is that if they're running 100 pounds of flower a day, they may be creating, you know, 10,000 grams of extract, a finished extract. And when you put that on the shelf space, that's $250,000, $300,000 a day, depending on what product they're making off of a very small based hydrocarbon extraction system. So when you look at the representative ROI to the CapEx, it's unheard of, right? I mean, your ROI in some cases can be 2, 3, 4, 5 days. In other industries, you're talking about months to years, right?
Yeah. And I mean, creating a whole business line around what you're offering, that's pretty great value.
Yep.
I was wrong. These really aren't related as much, but you know, there's been a lot of conversation recently, I guess, on our forum about sustainability within the cannabis industry. And I don't want to point you out in general, because I'm not sure, you know, the extraction space is probably just similar all the way around in terms of where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on sustainability within the extraction segment specifically.
Are we talking about sustainability in terms of energy consumption and like green initiatives?
Or yeah, green initiatives.
Green initiatives. Okay, so yeah. So actually, we're tremendously focused on that, ironically. And so the extraction process uses a lot of energy. We use a lot of energy for pumping, for heating, and for cooling. And so you can look at what we've done here in our most recent innovation of the XMU platform. We actually use a cross-current heat exchanger where we exchange the hot and cold against each other so that we're basically recycling the energy and the heat and the cooling within the machine. The translation is it makes it actually about 80% more energy efficient. So wow. We're very conscious of the green initiatives. We're very conscious of people's power bills. We're very conscious of the environment. And we've really taken that forward thinking and integrated it into our products. And the XMU is the first product that has this sort of energy recycling mechanism. But without giving away the farm, you're going to see a lot more of that coming from us. And you're also going to see some initiatives and possibly some certifications that are coming down for our equipment because we know the way the world's going. And obviously, we want to be a part of making it a better place.
That's really exciting. I am being told that we need to come to a close, but I refuse to come to a close until you can tell us, at least tell our audience, a little bit about the company looking forward. Now, I know you're not public. You know, you may want to hint at some plans. You may not, you know, feel free to if you want to. But, you know, yeah, our investors, are, they should be interested in you guys and rightfully so. So I'm curious if you want to touch on where you guys are headed.
Yeah, so we're still private. We recently completed a capital raise, and I think that you're going to see some very big news coming out very soon. Mark and myself have been working extremely hard to really correspond with all of the right people, and I'm bound by a lot of non-disclosures right now, so there's not a lot of details I can give you guys, but definitely keep an eye, because it's going to be a very exciting year for everyone involved.
Awesome, man. That's really exciting. Nick, we'll have you on again very soon, man. This conversation is far from over. Appreciate you joining us while you're in transit. Hope you have a safe travel, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. See ya. Take care.
All right, everybody. That was Nick Tennant, founder and CTO of Precision Extraction Solutions. If you don't know them, you should. They are, I would say they're probably the leader in extraction technology, at least in the U.S.
To quote the big CJ, the big CJ, CJ Wallace, whatever. I'm mixing names, Biggie Smalls. If you don't know, now you know.
Yes. So I think it's precisionextraction.com or precisionextractionsolutions.com. We'll get that website to you shortly.
Yeah.
Javier.
You can also follow them on Instagram. They have a pretty cool Instagram.
Yeah.
And Precision Extraction.
Nick is one of my favorite thought leaders in the space. He breaks things down very, very eloquently and very easily to understand. And he is just a wealth of knowledge, I think, in terms of the industry. So Javier, though.
Cover up MG Retailer, one of the magazines in the space, and they called him the king of extraction.
I mean, a good name. Javier, who do we have next, my friend?
Next up, we have Damian Marano, who's the CEO of Docklight Brands. Super interesting company.
Interesting. There he is.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Damian?
I need more coffee, but that just means I'm doing things right.
Amen. It's what, 1:30 over there? It's not too late for coffee.
That's what I'm going to tell myself when this is done. Yeah. When I'm exactly.
You and me are the same soul, man. I my coffee intake is a little bit dangerous, probably, we'll say. So Damian, why don't you get us started, my friend? Tell us about Docklight. Break it down for us.
Yeah, great. Well, so Docklight Brands is a company that's uniquely positioned to capitalize on the growth of both the legal cannabis and legal cannabinoid market. So we're a house of brands. We have an asset light model. And our main brand is Marley. So I don't know of a brand that really encapsulates kind of the ethos and authenticity of, you know, kind of the history and everything that went into cannabis than, you know, the legacy and spirit of the late Bob Marley, but that's our lead brand.
Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Never heard of him.
Who's Easy, that? Javier. You might get thrown in cannabis jail for that.
He has some good songs. You should check them out. in case you've never heard any of them.
I've gotten in trouble before, Damien, on here for saying Reg A, like a Regulation A raise, and I say Reg A, and Javier refuses to let me say that on here anymore because Reg A. Okay. Anyway, awful story.
All about the pregnant pause and embrace the silence. So what we do is we actually license out the Marley brand into recreational legal cannabis jurisdictions. So I'm happy to report as of today, we've got it in several states in the U.S., obviously all over Canada. We're partnered with High Park, which is the recreational arm of Tilray, and we've had exceptional growth last year. And then we are going into our third country, so we're going into Jamaica, and so there'll be some announcements on that soon. So I'm pleased because there's very few people as iconic as Bob Marley just in music, and especially when that translates over into the legal cannabis space, it really. Like Javier said, you know who he is and what it represents as soon as the words come out of your mouth, other than your Reg A. it's Marley, not Marley.
About the Marley brand, right? And the reach and distribution. You recently announced a deal with Turning Point Brands, which is publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker TPB. Can you tell us a little bit about that and their investment? It was $8.7 million, I believe.
Yeah. I come from the Coca-Cola company. So for me, it's all about brands, right? Obviously, most everyone on the planet has heard of Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. The secret of the Coke company beyond the brand is distribution. And when you look at, and when I was first able to meet the folks at Turning Point Brands, what impressed me is first they had Zig-Zag,
you can find Zig-Zags anywhere in America.
Yeah, which is a fantastic brand. And if you think about it, like, what do people put in their Zig-Zags? Well, hopefully they're putting a lot of Marley cannabis products into them. So it feels a bit like razors and blades. And what was interesting is they're also a company that's focused on brands, but they're equally focused on distribution, which is really what's made the Coca-Cola company successful. And so now what we're able to do going forward is partner with Turning Point Brands, and given their huge reach with Zig-Zag, they just had their quarterly earnings. I think it was Tuesday, and they crushed it. Zig-Zag had huge sales year over year, Q1 21 versus Q1 20. And when you look at that reach into the right channels, convenience retail, smoke shops, the independent channel broadly, and now you layer in a kind of an equally iconic brand with Marley with the right form factors and price points. And I think you've got kind of a perfect storm of the ability to really drive what we would call availability. So that means getting more product on more shelves nationally.
I'm curious, what does this look like consumer facing? I mean, is it a packaging play? Is it just a side-by-side play? Or I'm just curious.
It's a great question. So, I mean, it's still early innings. So I think the first thing is going to be just alignment and kind of a coordinated go-to-market with, how we talk about these things together, right? Mm-hmm. And the great thing is we've got great iconic brands. We've got, really strong sales teams with deep consumer and customer relationships. So I think that's going to be helpful. And I think you'll see us start to kind of expand that reach with a very, curated selection of products that we're going to bring out that really work well in the same part of the store, right? When you think about where a Turning Point Brands SKU usually sits and lives, it's age gated, so it's behind the counter. Guess what? That's one of the best places you can put an impulse buy item in a convenience retail store, like a lip balm or a roll on, because you just drive substantially higher sell through in the same four walls, depending on where you put it, and especially if you put things at the point of purchase. As a fun fact. Usually 60% of all purchase intent happens at the point of purchase.
Interesting.
Meaning, can you say that in English?
No.
So what it usually means is I don't know what I want till I get up there and I'm on the spot and they say,
oh yeah.
And that's why when you look at it, I mean, if you go to a restaurant, they always try to have you add a drink or some item at that point when you're making the order, because that's kind of where the magic happens. Mm-hmm. Conversely, it's an upsell.
Yeah.
And you know, and when you look at the convenient shopping occasion, generally speaking, it is a short duration occasion, right? The biggest battle in the convenience store industry is getting people from the pump, where they pay at the pump, into the store. And usually the dwell time is substantially lower. So your best place for product placement is right at that, what they call the golden triangle, the checkout register. And the longer you can increase dwell time during a shopping occasion in the C-stores, you drastically increase the dollar value of the purchase order.
Apologies if you went over this already, but could you touch on your footprint, just numbers-wise for us, like where we can find your products?
Yeah, so today I'm happy to say we're in about 13,000 stores across 44 states.
Wow.
We've got topicals in roughly probably about 75% of those stores. What's really interesting is we have a whole line of Marley branded CBD products. So think consumables. So Marley ready to drink teas, wellness shots, and chocolates. Those are in just under 4,000 stores in 36 states. So we have a pretty broad reach. We've done really well kind of on the coast and then filling in. And what I'm excited about with Turning Point Brands is the ability to kind of layer on more large chain customers. What we've seen is when we've put Marley into a national CBD planogram at a national retailer. So think of a major retailer in convenience retail or grocery. So maybe like a Safeway, Albertsons, maybe a 7-Eleven. What I'm happy to state is that our Marley lip balm is usually the number one selling SKU by velocity and dollar value. And it's a bit of, you know, placement in the store, the quality of the product, the recognition of the branding, and an approachable price point. But we've seen that now kind of consistently multi-channel, national footprint, convenience, grocery, as well as value channel, where that brand and that format reaches the number one product sales status by sales velocity.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, one thing I see is there's, you know, you have a lot of brands, as you mentioned, right? You're a house of brands.
Yeah.
But there is what to me seems like a pretty clear line, right? There's a consistency in the image of all of them, right? They lean towards a sophisticated consumer, right? Even the Marley brand, you'd expect, you know, to recur to a more, you know, reggae or Rasta kind of aesthetic.
Yeah.
Still goes for this like, you know, 2.0 kind of branding for cannabis. And even though, right, like even for instance, in on the brand, on the Marley brand, you do use, right, the Jamaican colors and all that, but in a different version.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about the brand itself and the demographics on what it touches on is, you know, Bob Marley himself is like a global icon. So you have immediate awareness. It cuts across broadly based gender cohorts, age cohorts, even socioeconomic levels. You know, I look at the brand and I think it has the ability to be, you know, a truly global iconic brand, both in legal cannabis and cannabinoids because of what it represents. And from a price point, you know, we're priced very affordably. So all the products we have out, our highest price SKU to the consumer is probably $19.99 for a topical, which is about half the industry average. And so we've really made this, I think to your point, an affordable luxury. And we see this as a product that should be kind of ubiquitous and everywhere, kind of given regulatory ability. And what we've seen so far is that as we've rolled these different formats, we're really able to kind of capture, you know, share of mind with the consumer. And really, you know, there's two parts of the equation. Getting to the shelf is hard enough in the cannabinoid space, but really the magic happens when it goes into the, you know, kind of the set of consumer trial and you get it off the shelf. And what I'm really happy to see is, you know, we're getting it to the shelf and then the consumers are taking it off the shelf fairly swiftly.
$20. That's incredibly affordable.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, you talk about your partnership with Tilray, and it seems like you all are pretty open to partnerships over at Docklight.
But I'd love to understand a little bit about what the merger between Tilray and Aphria meant for DocLight, if it meant anything.
Yeah, well, it's not. I mean, it, I don't know if it's completed yet. It just means that.
What is it, 2 days?
Yeah, maybe one tomorrow.
More. Yeah, tomorrow. Tomorrow, yeah.
No, I think it just means we're eager to continue the partnership with an even larger, you know, more developed player in the Canadian, you know, rec market. We don't have a, you know, horse in the race for medical, just kind of given, you know, what we are and how we do it. And I also think we're eager to see as, you know, the prior guest was talking about, as you see markets ease or become more open to a recreational framework. So Mexico is a great one, right? Like I'm very eager to see how that will roll down or, you know, the broader tri-state area. I think there's a really big play for us, you know, at DocLight to continue to expand the Marley footprint, as you said, either directly through, you know, the cannabinoid space or through this kind of partnership opportunity with licensure, with players that want to enter those, you know, either state level jurisdictions or sovereign jurisdictions.
That's really cool. So if you could, I mean, are you able to hint at any plans? Because it seems like you all are growing pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in any plans that you want to say, keep an eye out for 2021?
I would say that you're going to see us continue to expand globally. So we're launching the UK. We're doing e-commerce and we have, we'll start working on kind of retail distribution. So that's imminent and that's fine. That's going to come sooner rather than later. We have a very strong partnership, that we haven't launched publicly yet, but you'll see us go into the entirety of the Caribbean basin and parts of Latin America, Central America. So I think that's 38 to 40 countries. They're taking the full, Marley portfolio. So, you know, if you can imagine being on, you know, an island someplace in the Caribbean, which I'm sure we all think about often, although Javier, it looks like you're already there. So, and you wanted, you know, to, you know, treat your sunburn because you've been indoors for 17 months. Well, we've got some Marley Aloe After Sun with CBD, you know, ready for you. And then there's just, you know, there's a variety of other, distribution partnerships that I'm not at liberty to talk to, but there'll be some fairly large news that we have coming out soon. So I'll be happy to share that once I can.
Distribution.
Exclusively via Vinsenga, right?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. I love that. So you'll hear it first on Vinsenga.com/cannabis. Damien's committed to it right now, live.
Binding.
Yeah. Damien, I'm really curious about the UK. You know, so when I think about it, I think of maybe a few of the CBD leaders, like an IMAC that just got acquired. I think Zoetic, maybe Life Group. But I'm curious, you know, it seems like a right market right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be. I think, you know, candidly, that the last year was tough for everybody for a variety of reasons, right? Obviously, you know, the UK, like any other country, had issues with, you know, COVID, and then you layered on top of it a bit of the interestingness that was the Brexit kind of slow motion car crash that we all got to watch. And what we were really dealing with there was what would be the regulatory schema in a post-Brexit world. And so we weren't sure if it was going to maintain in alignment with the UN, with the EU Novel Foods Act, or if not. So that really kind of chilled our ability to get regulatory approval. So they've now, all those issues have been resolved. And, you know, we're going forward with launching e-com and we have product over there. I think, you know, obviously there's some great Bob Marley live albums that I think were recorded in England. So I think that it's going to resonate there really well. And so hopefully I'm eager to have some good report outs based on, you know, kind of the e-commerce traction and some of the other more traditional, you know, retail distribution partnerships we get into there and, you know, toward the back end of the year.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. Before we let you go, one question, and I don't know if you can answer or not, but, you know, a lot of our audience is very interested in investing in stocks. Have you ever, you know, considered going public yourself?
Not yet. I mean, we're still, you know, just kind of focused on heads down executing the plan, maybe in, you know, in a few years.
Damien, we put everybody on the spot with that question, man. Well, we have to.
Yeah, it was in my writer. I get it. So it's fine. You know, never, you know, like my mother said, never say never. Right. So, you know, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be interesting. And I think what I'm just eager about, at least with, you know, DocLight, the footprint and kind of the, you know, the thawing of the world post COVID and some of the big, regulatory changes. I mean, I think the legalization of efforts in Mexico is only going to continue to put pressure in the US, you know, because now it's north south and you got to get the middle. And so, yeah, you know, 12, 18 months down the line, you never know where we're going to be and what the growth rate's going to look like. But, it, you know, it could happen.
Well, I look forward to checking in with you once maybe. Let's check in again once Mexico does go legal, see how DocLight expands further, because it seems like you have taken every opportunity you guys can when it comes to markets. So it's really impressive, and I'm really looking forward to continuing to following you, and hopefully we can get you back on here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll go down and meet in Jamaica.
Yeah, oh my gosh, let's do it. Oh, yeah. Cannabis Hour trip.
If you want to come meet me up, just so you know.
Perfect.
Okay. Damien, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you soon. That was Damien Morano, CEO of DocLight Brands. That is DocLightBrands.com. Very, very cool company. Bob Marley licenses their products. But again, thank you so much, and we will see you soon, sir.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right. Fantastic. So, I mean, just two
very interesting story I want to share in the meantime, you know, in between the two guests, you know, there's, you know, we're talking about Bob Marley and the UK, and I don't know if this is true or not, but there's this myth.
You should ask Damien.
We should. We will. I will. Or Julian. So it, you know, the story goes like this. Apparently, Bob Marley was the only person to ever be allowed to consume cannabis inside of the Buckingham Palace when he was invited, because cannabis is part of a religious ritual for the Rastafari. The Queen said, go ahead, smoke your cannabis. If anyone in the chat knows if that's true or not, please let us know.
I don't know. What do you all think? If you think it's true, drop a one. If you think it's a kind of a pile of poo and a lie, drop the poo emoji for Javier.
It's reasonable, right? Like, the Queen is the kind of person who will drink, you know, the water with lemon that she put for you to wash her hands if you're drinking it too, right? It's a famous story. That one is true. So I don't think it's ridiculous to think, you know, they said, okay, this is clearly a religious ritual. This is a tradition, and this is our guest.
Yeah, I don't think it's ridiculous either. I want to see how many people will think it's true. Awesome. So we've had two amazing guests, two people I wish as a retail investor I could put a little money down on, but not yet. But do keep an eye on them. They are two very, very well-known companies in the cannabis industry. But we are finishing our day off with a public company. Javier, do you want to do the honors here?
We have Ola Lessard, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at Hemp Fusion Wellness.
Hemp Fusion!
Hi, guys. Oh. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, we're great. I love Thursdays. We get to talk to people and learn new things, learn how the cannabis industry is growing. And I think I'm so excited for this interview because you have a couple hats you wear. So mm-hmm. We have had Jason on here before. To talk a little bit about Hemp Fusion, but would you mind maybe telling us who you are, but also what other hat you wear within the hemp industry?
Sure. Yeah. So again, thanks for having me. And I think you guys had Jason on right after we went public earlier this year. So
yes.
Yeah, very cool. And I know he really enjoys the show. So it's a pleasure to be here with you guys. So my name is Ola Lessard. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer with Hemp Fusion Wellness. And as you guys know, we are both a hemp-derived CBD company, product company, and we also have a probiotics company, Propulence, under our umbrella. So I manage the marketing there, but I also have the distinct pleasure of serving as the president of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, both this last year and again this year. So they gave me a do-over because COVID. I think they just felt sorry for me, like, give her a do-over.
It's like the mile, right? It's like when you're about to lose your mileage status, and they go call to American Airlines, like, hey, dude, I couldn't fly last year. Don't demote. They're like, yeah, you got to do over.
I think it was pretty much that. Yeah, they're like, oh, you know, we don't want to hurt her feelings. So, I mean, which, you know, as you guys know, is a great organization and one of the really leading organizations in the hemp industry, doing a lot of the lobbying, trying to get, you know, clarity from the FDA and on all the state level as well. So it's, now, you know, I get to work with those guys, and they're just an incredible group of people an incredible group of peer companies too, I will say. Like, you know, I sit on the executive committee, and obviously our members, most of us are competitors, you know, but I will say, I think it's a really tremendous industry in that even though many of us are, you know, significant competitors at shelf or, you know, wherever we are, we really genuinely have a lot of love and respect. And it's, you know, one of those rising tide raises all ships kind of scenarios. And it's a really great group of people to be able to work with. It's genuinely my pleasure.
It is very true. You know, that is very true too, right? If you ever attend like a Benzinga Cannabis Capital conference or any other conference, you know, in the industry for that matter, you will see exactly that. Just, you know, companies that are like head-to-head competitors, just rubbing elbows, grabbing drinks, maybe sharing a joint.
No, you know. Javi, that only happens at Benzinga. I'm sorry.
I don't want to just do my own
thing. We have to amend that statement.
That is exacerbated at our event.
There you go. So while we're on the topic of the Hemp Roundtable, you're speaking my language a little bit when it comes to the FDA. Question I pose on here many times to people like Deanie Elsner and Jason himself, and just really curious at your thoughts and your perspective on, you know, we've been over like why CBD is where it is right now. It's because of the lack of regulation. Yeah. So I'm curious though, A, what you all are doing to when the FDA gets involved to be ready for it as Hemp Fusion, and B, I'm guessing you being on the president of Hemp Roundtable benefits Hemp Fusion as well, right?
The roundtable obviously is a whole bunch of people that are working to make stuff happen. So yeah, but is there, you know, some benefit? I think there's a benefit to being on the board of the roundtable, period. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're the president or you're just involved or just a really involved member. I mean, the organization is really, you know, at the cutting edge and the bleeding edge of where things are going and what's happening in the conversation. So I genuinely think for any company that is in this space, there really is a benefit to being part of that organization. And I'm sure for some of the other hemp organizations that are out there, so there are a number of really good organizations that exist. And, you know, we work together pretty well for the most part, all of us trying to, you know, get to the same place, and we have different agendas sometimes, but in the end, you know, we want to create an industry that works for everybody up and down the supply chain, you know, whether you're, you know, at the farming level or a finished good, you know, manufacturer like we are and seller. So, I think there's some benefit to being part of those conversations, but I don't, you know, I think it's, again, I'm super honored to have been asked to be the president of this organization. Mm-hmm. I will say, one of the things that I'm really proud about with us is just, you know, as an organization, you know, we're really trying to look beyond just the business, direct business side of this. There's a lot of diversity initiatives that we're involved with. It's something that's really, really critical to our leadership. I'm really proud to say that, you know, of our slate of officers this year, we have 11 officers. I think 5 are women, 4 are people of color. 1 is a member of the LGBTQ community, you know, and maybe more, 1 at least that we know of, and is open. But I think, you know, it is something that we look at the history of the hemp industry. And, you know, let's be honest, this was an industry that was largely built on the backs of slaves. You know, it was a huge industry in the beginning of this country, and it was, you know, a crop that was farmed by people of color who didn't get benefit from it. And that is something that, as an organization, even though it's not necessarily part of like what our sort of typical overt charge is, it's something that we recognize we're in a position to try to address and make a difference. So, I mean, just as an example, last year we had or rather earlier this year, a really successful minority and small business webinar, you know, just really trying to say like, hey, we as industry leaders, a lot of us from larger, you know, well-funded companies, people with decades of experience, you know, getting a lot of these experts out and just inviting people, whether they're small business owners, you know, any kind of, you know, minority business owners, are saying like, we want to help try to pave a better path here. So again, mm-hmm. I think like this, we're doing a lot of this sort of legislative lobbying work, but we're also really trying to look at the industry in a broader way and try to make sure we're bringing everybody that we can under this umbrella, because truly we are going to be stronger if we do that as an industry. And each of us, hopefully, as companies as well. So it's just, it's a,
great,
you know, it's, I guess for me, I'm very personally proud of it. And I will say, when I first joined the Hemp Roundtable in my previous job, I worked for Barleans, and I came and I, you know, I think they, like, Jonathan Miller, our general counsel, who's really kind of leads this organization, and is true. I mean, I think he like did like a little happy dance because there was, you know, a woman in the room. And I think maybe there was one, maybe two other women around that table, and, you know, a table of 40 or whatever it was. And it was just like,
wow.
It was giddy. And it's so different now. I mean, it's just really cool to see all of these women coming up through the ranks. And, you know, nothing against you guys, but, you know, it was a little white and it was a little male.
I'm all for it. Yeah. Clara Cummings, Finn Power.
I mean, in a couple of years.
Part of our mandate at his show here, we have to have like at least one woman per show.
Yeah,
and that was
really
brought up to us, you know, a while back. There's this organization I want to shout out because they really do something that they've accomplished something really important. It's called Manowatch. And they reached out to us and said, like, hey, you know, some of I noticed this panel on this event is two guys and a guy moderator.
Yeah.
You should consider, you know, trying to balance it out. Right. And it's not always easy. It takes additional work. Like it takes extra work to find women in the C-suite. I can tell you this because I'm like, I produce a show and it takes a lot more emails, a lot more calls to find women in the C-suite to date. Right. But, you know, again, shout out to this group because they brought it to our attention and they did the work, right. They really took the time to talk with us and, you know, point out what we should do better. And we did.
Well, hopefully we get to feature some of your colleagues from Hemp Roundtable.
Yeah, there's some tremendous people. I will share some names with you guys because there are some women in this space that are just doing really, really cool things. You know, whether it's Mariel Weintraub from the U.S. Hemp Authority, you know, Amber Littlejohn with the Minority Business Cannabis Association. I mean, there's just these powerhouse women. And, you know, and again, I have incredible male colleagues as well. But it is really interesting to me just in just a few years what I'm seeing. And I know you guys have done shows, you know, looking at women in the industry and people are starting to talk about that. And again, I think it's just, you know, when you bring more people under the umbrella, regardless of whether it's because of gender or race or whatever, like you just get better ideas. I mean, I'm a marketing person, right? So like to me, you know, it's ideas and it's looking at things from different perspectives and that's my job. And that's just kind of how my brain works, you know? You know, my fabulous little ADD marketing brain. So it's like, but you know, that's the superpower, right? It's kind of like looking at things from all angles. And I think, you know, not everybody does that naturally and not all companies do that. And not all organizations just kind of think to do it. And if you just take a moment and kind of step back and realize this just makes us better. It's just, and again, it's exciting to be part of this organization. The roundtable, like not only just where we are in terms of legislative action and what we, you know, fingers crossed, really hope is coming soon, but also just the evolution of the organization as a whole. So it's an exciting thing, and I'm, you know, like I said, I mean, I really sincerely mean what I say. I'm like, I'm honored to be in that role because I am surrounded by just brilliant people in, you know, not just in the organization, but in all of these other companies that are my competitors, and you know, in most cases, also my really good friends. So, yeah. Some great stuff happening.
You were talking about decades of experience in relation to something else, but then you brought up Barleans, you know, and you have more than 20 years of experience in marketing, which is awesome. At the same time, you go like, oh damn, how time has passed. 20 years. Like, when did this happen?
Can you tell I'm working in a teenage girl's bedroom who's now moved out, you know what I mean? So,
by the way, Kat says she wants all the product in your background.
Me too.
You can tell what that is.
We'll split it, Clara.
But I
people laugh because they think it's just a display, but actually, like, because I'm in marketing, I mean, every day, pretty much during the day, that gets destroyed because I'm pulling packaging, I'm reading things. You know, I've got my like Mr. Magoo giant, you know, magnifying glass because, you know, I'm in my 50s and that's just my real world. Tiny writing on tiny packaging, you know, but every day I'm yanking stuff off that shelf and then, you know, I kind of start my day by trying to get it in order most days. But yeah, no, it's
cool. Can we jump on that real quick, the packaging aspect? Because I read something about some thoughts of yours recently about Prop 65. And I hear you have some opinions.
I'll be nice. Maybe. I'm from Massachusetts originally. So that takes work, guys. not just Prop 65, but I think one of the challenges that we have, candidly, because of the lack of clear direction from the federal government, is, you know, you have this industry, everybody started getting out there with products. As you know, there's, you know, over 3,000, who knows how many just CBD companies at this point, right? And yet then you run into this whole issue with lack of clarity from the federal government. So every state, you know, therefore, try to figure it out and make up their own rules. And some of these states have, you know, cannabis experience, if you will, and some of them, you know, have no idea what you know, even where to start. And so, you know, one of the things that is frankly challenging for, you know, anyone who's dealing with the packaging side, but also just, I think when you're trying to be one of the good guy and you got good guy companies and you guys know, like, our big thing is like, we are super compliant. We follow the rules. You know, I mean, that is one of our kind of claims to fame, I think, at HempFusion, is that we, you know, are really proud of our regulatory portfolio and our sort of compliance and safety and all of the good stuff that we do. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I think when you're a company like that, it's a little tougher on you because, you know, we have this myriad of different state regulations that have happened. So, you know, Florida wants you to put this THC warning on it saying how much Delta 9 THC is in your product, and you have to spell it all out with the real words. And I mean, it's just, you know, and you've got, you know, you got to put a, you know, a QR code for these states. And, you know, these are tiny little packages and there's a lot of regulations. And I understand why this happens at the state level, but it is one of the challenges. And, you know, I won't say Prop 65 from California is because of that specifically, but it's just sort of another thing. And I don't know, you know, your viewers are probably aware, I mean, but California declared, you know, this year that, you know, that THC, Delta 9 THC was going to fall under their Prop 65, which is, you know, any of us that have ever, you know, pretty much bought anything, you see those little warnings that say, you know, this product is known to the state of California to cause, you know, cancer or birth defects or whatever. And I mean, Prop 65 was passed, I think, like in the 1986 or something. And it's a consumer safety law. And I think, you know, I suspect it was very well intentioned when it was passed to, you know, it was the part of the clean, you know, safe drinking water and all this stuff. And so all the right reasons, but it is kind of a crazy law when you look at actually what their level of requirement is to label stuff. And even with some really known dangerous, you know, compounds like lead, you know, for example, they typically have what they call a safe harbor level. And the way, and I won't get into super detail on how Prop 65 kind of decides what their level is, but they, you know, in a nutshell, they take like, here's the level at which we know there's an observable effect, either of people or lab animals. And here's, you know, below that level, there's no observable effect. Now we take that number, let's call it X, and we divide it by 1,000. And that's the level at which you have to label above. So it's 1/1,000th of this thing that, you know, maybe you saw something happen in a mouse. So again, well-intentioned, but it's kind of off the rails a little bit, I think. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, most of our products, all of our products, you know, essentially are non, you know, we have no discernible level of THC. We can label them no THC. We put the like tested to, you know, 0.01% or whatever. So people know, like, we tested to this level and we didn't find any THC. So, but California didn't give a safe harbor level to THC. So even though there's a level at which below you have lead, you don't have to put that warning on there. They didn't set that level for THC. So now our products, you know, we're non-detectable for THC to the lab level that we do, but could there be someone out there that tests to the 0.00001%? maybe. Mm-hmm. And could there be a trace of THC at that level? Yeah. I mean, this is a natural product that, you know, of course there could be. And so even though that's a level we don't know anybody's testing to, it could happen. Mm-hmm. And there's just a whole industry of Prop 65 lawyers out there that make their living, you know, essentially coming after companies and threatening them. And it's really about settling, and it's really about paying them off. And so I just think, you know, it's one of those things that it's really challenging when you have that kind of regulation, because now I have a product that says no THC on the front, tested to, you know, 0.01%. And I have to put a warning label on it saying that the state of California thinks, you know, it could cause birth defects. It's, and the problem is, you know, people who are really savvy or work in the industry, we know this, or anybody who lives in California basically ignores this. It's on every peach you buy. It's all over Disneyland. It doesn't matter, like, everywhere you go, but we all sell across the country. So, you know, does somebody in Idaho pick up that product from a compliant company like me, who's going to be really careful, and I'm going to put it, even though I know it's kind of crazy, you know, but, you know, maybe there's another company out there that, you know, is a little bit more fly by night. They're not playing the long game. They, you know, they can shut down and pop up under another name in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. If, you know, they get in trouble for something. And that's just not how our company operates. We're, you know, we're very compliant. And so we just, I think when you have, whether it's Prop 65 or you have all of these different state requirements that aren't cohesive, you know, in a way you end up kind of hurting the bad guy, the good guys, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because we're going to put all the things on the label. But then as a result, like, I have a product on the shelf and it looks really scary. You know what I mean? If I don't know any better, I might be like, oh my God, I'm not going to take this. But, oh, this one doesn't have that warning. It must be fine. You know, so, I think that's one of the challenges, and why I think as an industry we're saying, like, please, please regulate us, because companies that are trying to do it right are actually the ones that are more being harmed by the lack of regulation. And it's just things like that that kind of make it very tricky.
If you're doing things right, it's because you're following regulations. Regulations are happening. Therefore, they're a burden to the company. If you're not doing things right, well, then – you know, screw regulation.
Yeah, then you have this, like, beautiful, clean-looking label that's not covered in crazy warnings that are terrifying, right? So, you know, I think it's like, and that's just a side of things. And again, I look at all these pieces of legislation, and I realize they're probably well-intentioned, but I think sometimes they get away from us, and sometimes, you know, just things kind of get slapped down because there's not a clear path. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're really, really hoping that the FDA will act and provide that really clear path and say, these are the requirements to be, you know, legal as a supplement for CBD. And if you stay in here, you're good. And if you're out there, then you shouldn't be on the shelf anyway. And, you know, that's great. And that will cause the natural kind of, you know, consolidation of the industry and kind of make it where people know that what's on the shelf should be safe and effective.
I'd love to kind of bring this to a point here. Aaron, I'm sorry, we're going to go a few minutes over because Ola is Ola. So if you could. This conversation is starting over.
Your celebrity deals, your athlete deals.
Oh, we have so much I want to talk to you guys. I know. We're doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, but if you could, how are you getting around that? Like, I mean, you're I know it's education. It's education, education, education. So how are you getting that education, or maybe just your name? What are the campaigns that you are running right now to try and conquer laws like that?
I mean, you know, obviously in terms of what we're doing, we're being super compliant, but you're right. I mean, education is a piece of it. And just, it's a, you know, again, if you're, you know, a good marketer is about building a relationship and trust, right? It's about you, you know, feeling that this company, knowing enough about us to understand that we're going to do things right. So we're safe, we're trustable. And then it's about creating that connection. And we do, you know, with our IPO, we, you know, some of the money that we raised, I mean, we're really building out things like our influencer marketing program. You know, so we have people out there that are talking about it and ambassadors to introduce people to the brand that maybe have never heard of us. We're actually doing a huge push too to just frankly do a better job, I think, with our retail partners. I mean, I'm a very big advocate of kind of brand voice and being a company that, you know, I always tell my staff, like, if you wouldn't say it like that, don't say it like that. Like, talk like a normal human. And I think sometimes companies who are very sort of technically oriented as we can be, can come across kind of professorial and a little, you know, just kind of stodgy. Yeah. And you know, what we want to kind of be better at getting to is just talking to people the way they talk and helping to break it down in a way that's clear and understandable and you know, and not kind of, I want us to be seen as sort of like that super duper smart neighbor you have that, like, really gets something that you don't get.
But if you ask them about it, you know, they don't make you feel stupid that you're asking the question. They just, they're really good at kind of breaking it down and being like, oh yeah, you know, this is how, you know, space flight works or whatever, you know? And, you know, I think this is complicated stuff, and we can get really technical and can get really detailed, or we can just kind of be like, let me help you understand it. Like, this is kind of how your body works. This is what it does and or doesn't. And we're really limited in what we can say as, you know, as companies in this space, as supplement manufacturers in general. You know, we can't always tell people what we believe our products do. We're not allowed to. So, you know, but I guess part of me at this point thinks a lot of most people know why they want CBD. So maybe we don't even have to get too deep anymore. We can, not everybody. And there's still people who don't know if it's, you know, is this weed? If it's not, you know, I mean, but 3 years ago, that was a totally different story. We had to just start there with everybody. And now most people have already heard it somewhere else. Now they just want to know, like, can I trust this product? You know, mm-hmm. can I trust this company? Is it, you know, and, you know, I mean, I tried this and it didn't work. Well, it's a natural product. So like these are, this comes from plants, you know. You know, if it's a full spectrum or broad spectrum hemp extract, they're not all the same, you know, and ours might work for you when somebody else's does or doesn't, and frankly, vice versa. So I think it's just about kind of having that conversation with the people who use our products and buy our products, and trying to help our retailers, you know, have those conversation. And then, you know, we've made a huge investment in our own kind of digital marketing presence. So we're really working on being able to build out that piece of it on our, you know, our own properties, our own website and our own social and stuff like that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does. It does. I have a lot of follow-up questions that I can't ask right now. I think we do have to come to a close, Ola, but I mean, we have to have you back on soon. We'll make it happen. This has been an absolute pleasure.
I'm coming to Jamaica with you guys.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I was on and I heard that, so I'm in, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Just bring all those products behind you and we'll make it happen. Clara, you can come too. Thank you again. Ola Lessard, CMO of Hemp Fusion and the president of Hemp Roundtable. Very, very well established. Fem Power in the cannabis space. We're thrilled to have you on. We will have you back on soon to finish this discussion. Thanks awesome. Again for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. Javier, that was enlightening. Those three conversations we just had were enlightening.
Love them. I loved all of them. And they were super educational too, right?
Yes.
You know, like, all these people were talking about not just their companies, but industry-wide topics. And that I enjoy a lot.
Yeah, right? There's a lot of questions about the CBD space, y'all. And I know you all have them too. You know, about when are we actually going to know what's in the product? But like people like Ola are working to make that knowledge mainstream. So, you know, it's wonderful to kind of get an update from somebody like her. And Hemp Fusion is a leader in the CBD space. They have partnerships with Amazon. They're marketing with NASCAR. They're doing a ton of stuff that we will have her back on and cover. So thank you all for joining us. Javier, always a pleasure. We didn't dive into flower earnings, but we'll do that on Tuesday. You know, if that's good for you all, but thank you so much for joining us.
4:30 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss Cannabis Insider, Benzinga Cannabis Hour next Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yep. Awesome, y'all. Thank you so much, Javier. Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll see you all later.
Peace.
Have you heard the term concierge medicine and wondered exactly what that means? In short, it's the answer to the question, isn't there a better solution to my healthcare? Concierge medicine means virtually no waiting for your doctor. It means 24/7 access to physician care. It means truly individualized healthcare, all at a cost that's lower than you might expect. See pricing and learn more at partnermd.com. It's better healthcare for an even better you.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on.
Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.